Hi, this is Michael Buffer, and welcome to the Box Hard Podcast.
Hello, everyone. This is Mikey Garcia.
This is the monster from the swamp, Regis Ruru Progre.
Hey, what's up? This is King Carlos Molina, former IBF world champ.
This is Michael, the bounty hunter, 2012 Olympian and your people's champ.
This is Charlie Edwards, flyweight champion of the world.
This is Fast Eddie Chambers, and you're listening to the Box Hard Podcast with my main man, Joey Cosmo.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 422 of the Box Hard Podcast. I'm your host, Joey Coastman. I'm joined, as always, by former heavyweight world title challenger, Mr. Fast Eddie Chambers. Eddie, how you doing this week, my man?
I'm doing great, my man. How about you?
Always good when speaking with you, Eddie. We're going to dive straight into the review part of the show. On last week's show, Eddie, you said that you were going to try to take a look at the boxing. I don't know if you did. It's either going to be a nice surprise or an unpleasant breaking of the news that you didn't. We'll see. Let's leave the listeners on edge. We're going to start here with a card that went down last Thursday, the 9th of November at the Madison Square Garden Theatre in New York, USA. Over here, the Irish undefeated super welterweight Callum Walsh moved to 9-0, a unanimous decision over 10 rounds against Ismael Villarreal, who's now 13-2. It was for the WBC USA silver super welterweight title. I felt the fight, you know, in all honesty, was probably a 7-3, maybe 6-4 type of fight for Callum. I think Callum maybe slightly caught between styles a little bit. It was the first time I'd properly sat down and, you know, properly studied him. I think he's got a lot of tools. He's got great feet, but he only seems to use them defensively rather than offensively, if that makes much sense. I think he's got good power, he's got good hand speed, good boxing IQ, good stiff jab when he used it, good head movement. And he came up against a very game opponent in Villarreal, who gave him a real test. Villarreal just kept coming and coming. You know, he was hurt a couple of times, but he still kept coming. It was a great fight, actually. I think Callum will learn as well a lot from that, and I think he'll improve. And he's definitely not the finished article just yet, still young. But one thing I do want to note, is that Walsh has a lethal uppercut. He really showed that in this fight, a lethal uppercut. But too many times, for my liking, he was trying to land it out of range and he was zapping his energy. You know, it was missing. And obviously, you miss a big heavy uppercut, you know, that takes your energy away. But like I say, I think he's going to learn from that fight there. And, you know, he's still a young man, still settling into the pros. But yeah, impressive from him. A lot of people, you know, kind of saying, oh, let's slow down a bit. Maybe he's not as good as the hype around him. You know, I think that's a bit harsh. We'll have to wait and see. But impressive from Walsh, but a close fight. Villarreal, definitely like to see him in with, you know, a couple of other guys, maybe being in the away corner providing tests. Moving now to this one, it went down in Brighton at the Brighton Centre on the Friday. This was live on Channel 5. Let's start with the undercard, though. Tommy Welch with a TKO in round 4. He's now 12-0. His opponent, Jonathan Vergara, was the undefeated Argentine, 5-0. He was down 4 times in the fight, and he gets stopped there in round 4. So a good win for Tommy Welch. Also on the card as well, Roman Fury with his first knockout win. He's 3-0 with 1 KO. A third round TKO for him against Bradley Davies, who's now 1-6 with a draw. Davies down prior to the stoppage. It was a good shot, actually, to end things from Roman Fury. Tyson, I don't think, came out to the fight, but, you know, Tommy was there, Big John was there, and, yeah, they were celebrating like mad when he landed that shot. It was a great shot, and he was very hyped up in that post-fight interview, saying, you know, everyone thought I couldn't punch. Well, look at that. Good stuff for him. It's definitely a work in progress, obviously. Also on the card as well, friend of the show, Lerone Richards, with a win. He's now 18-0, a points win over 8 at super middleweight against Mickey Ellison, now 14-6. Yeah, one-sided from Lerone Richards. I thought there's a chance he might get a stoppage, even though it was unlikely, but I liked the look of the odds on it. And yeah, it didn't come close to happening. It's another bizarre performance from Lerone Richards, who just needs to get going before he ends up, you know, just I can see he's kind of like a Demetrius Andrade character where he's a good undefeated fighter, but it just seems like, I don't know if it's the style or whatever, but they just can't really land big enough fights for him. But the thing with Andrade, obviously, you know, he picked up a few world titles, whereas Lerone Richards hasn't boxed near that level just yet. Also on the card, Sultan Zorbek, now 16-0, a TKO for him in round 6 against Sergio Sosa, who's now 13-4. Sosa down in the 4th, and then also in the 6th, he also fouled the weight as well. Sergio Sosa came in a pound and a quarter over the limit. But yeah, TKO'd in the 6th round. It was for the vacant WBO Global Super Featherweight title. Zorbek now has that. And the main event, Harlem Eubank, now 19-0. A TKO for him in round 11 against Timo Schwarzkopf, who's now 22-6. He's been stopped there for the first time in his career. It was for the WBO Global Super Lightweight title, which was vacant. I've got to say, I was really, really impressed with Harlem Eubank here. I thought he'd win. I thought he'd win on points. I mean, he's not really known as a massive banger. I think he was 18-0 with, I think, 7 KOs. And on paper, this was the, you know, the toughest fight of his career. Let's have it right. Schwarzkopf as well had been around the block, you know, had respectable power himself. Been in with the likes of Jack Catterall, Chris Van Heerden, Anthony Yigit. Though all of those guys have also got something in common. They're not really punchers either. And he lost to all of them on points. But yeah, got in there with Harlem Eubank. He was hurt early on. Can't remember what round it was now. It was like the 3rd or something like that. He hurt him pretty bad. And yeah, you know, the German managed to weather the storm, if you like. And Eubank had a point deducted as well for low blows. He really landed them quite a lot, to be honest. He had a point took off in the 5th round. There was a knockdown as well before that. Again, I think it was round 3. Schwarzkopf was down. That's what I'm talking about. Yeah, hurt him, put him down. Like I say, Schwarzkopf weathered the storm, and then Eubank ended up getting a point deducted a couple rounds later, which kind of cancelled out the 10-8. And then, yeah, the shot to finish it, man. Honestly, Eubank was lethal in that 11th round. I was really impressed with even the gas tank, you know, to still carry that power, that poise. It's clear to see that Harlem Eubank is supremely gifted when it comes to his athleticism, you know, the movement. It's natural, you know, he's very athletic. You can see that, you know, the way he moves, like I say, the head movement, the understanding of range, the quick foot speed. He's got a lot there. He straight away called out Conor Benn. I don't know if that would be a bit too far of a step at this point. I'd probably go as far to say, not that I think Ben is this world beater like some people do, but I think that might be a bit too far of a step for Harlem Eubank. I think it'd be interesting, but I just think Ben might hit a bit too hard. But look, you know, all the best to both men. If that fight were to happen, I'd be cheering for Harlem. So all the best to him going forward, and it was a career best win for him. Really happy for him. I think he lost his father about 5 or 6 weeks ago, so that's got to be very tough, you know, when you're in training camp and then, you know, your father passes away. It's got to be real tough. There's been a few passings, sadly, in the Eubank family recently. So yeah, all the best to him. He's now managed by Chris Senior, which was quite interesting, made for an interesting post-fight interview when Chris Senior left behind his kind of posh accent. That accent he speaks with that makes everything sound pretty sophisticated. Well, that, he left that behind to drop a bit of patois in there, a little bit of, I can't remember what he said now, the golden dreadlocks, I think he was saying, which was quite funny. he was calling Conor Benn golden dreadlocks. But anyway, we're going to move on because I've gone down a bit of a alleyway there. Moving now to Buenos Aires, the Club Social y Deportivo El Porvenir. There you go, you've had a few accents in about 20 seconds there. This one was in Argentina, like I say, Jeremias Nicolas Ponce. First time returning to the ring after losing for the vacant world title against Subriel Matias. He was back with a bang. A KO in round 2 against Andres Tejada, who was certainly overmatched. He's now 10-3 with 2 draws. Tejada down in the 2nd round and KO'd. Good return there for Jeremias Ponce, now 31-1. Moving now to the Newcastle Arena in Tyneham, where this one was live on DAZN and Eddie Hearn show. Let's talk about the undercard. Wasn't a great undercard, in all honesty. I missed a few of these fights. I thought the card was probably the poorest of the year from Matt Drum. I think it may have been a next-gen card. I hope it was a next-gen card. Anyway, on the card, Callum French lost his O. He's now 4-1. He was TKO'd in the eighth and final round by Jeff Afori, who was a sizable underdog. But I think those that know that Jeff Afori is actually quite a good fighter and much better than his record suggests. His record going in was 12-5 with two draws. He's now 13-5 with two draws. I felt he was always capable. I think that they were kind of rolling the dice a bit there, you know, taking a bit of a gamble with Callum French in just his fifth pro fight. And yeah, Jeff Afori, you know, I don't know if you could say he outmanned him or what, but very impressive from Jeff Afori. Again, not really known as a big puncher, but he just got to Callum French, cut his eye, I think, in round four, but I think that was a head clash, and I think the cut bothered French as well. And yeah, Jeff Afori, like I say, with the final round TKO, the towel came in from French, and yeah, he's put in a great win there, Jeff Afori, happy for him. A lot of people felt that he beat Archie Sharp a couple years back, and that was, you know, it was a close fight. You know, there's no arguing there. It was definitely a close fight, and you know, Archie Sharp was ranked, I think, like number one or number two in the world at the time. Jeff Afori arguably beat him in some people's eyes, but yeah, he kind of after that didn't look too great. But he's back with a bang here. Also on the card, Ewan McKenzie, now 8-1. He was TKO'd in round 8. Another towel came in the ring in round 8 on this card. There it was. Ishmael Davis with a TKO. A win there for him. He's now 12-0. Mark Dickinson with a TKO against Grant Dennis. I wasn't too sure that Dickinson would win this one by TKO. I thought he'd probably win on points. But Dennis was down just prior to the stoppage, and a good TKO win for Mark Dickinson, now 6-0, Grant Dennis 18-6, and the main event, Shabazz Masood, now 12-0, a split decision win over 10 rounds against the very tough Jose San Martin, now 34-8 with a draw. It was for the vacant WBA Intercontinental Super Bantamweight title. Really, really good fight. Again, Shabazz Masood, he's spoken about so highly of. And they're saying that, you know, if this guy just wins one world title, he's had a terrible career. This guy needs to be a world champion in multiple weights, otherwise he hasn't hit his full potential. That's what Ben Davison, his trainer, is saying. That's how highly he rates him. But he didn't look anywhere near that level the other night, and it has to be said. I know this fight was set to take place, I think, two or three weeks earlier, and Masood had to pull out on, I think it was the day of the fight, or like maybe just after the weigh-in. Like he made weight as far as I can remember, but he wasn't well enough to actually have the fight, so they moved it back a couple weeks, and maybe there was some after effects of the illness, I don't know, but you know, he didn't quite look right, Masood. Again, it was one of those fights where he won quite a few of the rounds just off the jab, but he was nicking rounds a lot, whereas San Martin, I think, was having the bigger moments. He was very aggressive, and the rounds to San Martin were quite easy to score, whereas the rounds for Masood, you know, that he wasn't doing much in those rounds to win them. A little bit like Fury and Ngannou, how everyone thinks, you know, Ngannou won that fight because look at that right hand he landed, and look at this. But you're not counting all those times where Fury was jabbing Ngannou and winning off the jab. It was a little bit, in some ways, similar to that kind of theory, if you like, here. But yeah, a lot of people felt that San Martin deserved it. A lot of people felt that Masood deserved it. It was close either way, whichever way you saw it. And he's got away with one there a little bit, Masood, and he's undefeated. But credit to him, he came out in the post-fight interview and pretty much said, I wasn't very good there. I'm much better than that. And, you know, that was quite a bad showing. And Ben Davison did say that this style that San Martin has was always going to cause Masood nightmares. But, you know, we need to beat everyone if we're going to get to the position that we think we can get to. So credit to those guys and all the best to them moving forward. Moving now to the Loom Colour Phoenix Centre in Ontario, California, USA. This card over here, it wasn't a great card. It was kind of mad, actually. Five fights on the card, three of them ended in draws, if I'm not mistaken. The one fight that was worth mentioning was two guys that have been on this podcast in the past. Ernesto Mercado, 12-0. He's now 13-0. He KO'd in just two rounds Jeremiah Nakafila, who's now 23-4. Sad to see it for, you know, fans of Jeremiah Nakafila, who, you know, like I say, he's a really cool guy. He's a policeman back home in Namibia, and he owns a pub called the Low Key Pub. He likes to keep himself very low key. But it was a little bit premature, I think, the stoppage from the referee. You know, I watched it live, actually. I actually tuned in and paid to watch this fight live because, just, you know, both guys been on the show, so I was quite excited to see it. Mercado obviously was having quite a big step up, really. I thought that, you know, I said it on last week's show, I can see Nakafila winning this fight. I can see Mercado winning this fight. I didn't want to bet on the fight because I could just see it going every which way apart from Nakafila winning on points. But yeah, to Mercado's credit, he came out. He was just too good for Nakafila, really. You know, he's got that kind of amateur style, but I say that respectfully. I mean, like, very kind of compact, smart, knowing distance well. This is what, you know, these kind of traits you end up picking up when you've had hundreds of amateur fights. And Mercado has still got that smart style. He doesn't waste shots. He doesn't give his opponent opportunities when he doesn't need to. And he looks like a very promising fighter for the future, Ernesto Mercado. And this was another win to go along with that. But yeah, I mean, Nakafila never really got going. You know, he stood there, took some hard shots even in the first round, and then come out in the second round and got banged out. Like I say, I think it was a little bit premature from the referee, if my memory serves me right. But all the best to Nakafila. Hope he's okay. He did say after the fight that he's just happy to, you know, be fighting at this level as a Namibian professional fighter. He didn't seem too disappointed with the loss, really, which I don't know if that's a great thing or not. But anyway, all the best to both men there. And the final card to mention went down at the Glass City Center in Toledo, Ohio, USA. Over here, again, I watched this one. It was streamed live on Facebook. It genuinely looked like the fight took place in like a school assembly hall. You know, like they moved the apparatus out the way and set up a boxing ring. It was, you know, it looked seriously bad, you know, like, honestly, he must have not really been paid much here. But Albert Bell, he was back with a bang, a TKO for him, which doesn't come too often. He knocked out in two rounds Jason Velez, who's now 30-12 with a draw. So yeah, I guess somewhat impressive from Albert Bell. Obviously quite overmatched, really, Jason Velez. But, you know, Velez is tough. We've seen it time and time again. He's been able to tough it out. He'd only been stopped three times in 11 losses, you know. To be banged out in two rounds, that's the quickest he's ever been banged out, you know. The other times he was banged out, it was round 10 against Valdez, round 6 against Gabe Flores Jr., and round 6 against Ernesto Mercado, who we just mentioned. But to do it in just two rounds was quite impressive from Albert Bell, who has now picked up, if I'm not mistaken, two stoppages in a row, which is the first time, I believe, that has happened for him. Let's have a little look here. No, he did it once back in 2018. He got two in a row. That's the best he's ever done. So hopefully he wins his next fight by a knockout and extends that streak. But I'm really happy for him because he's another guy who's had quite a tough year. And I'm happy that he's ending things on a positive note with a good win and a good method of victory. But anyway, that brings the review part to a close. I'm going to assume, Eddie, that you didn't get time to watch anything.
Yeah, honestly, man, we were planning on watching. I know I was planning on watching fights, but just got crazy for me this weekend with me working and training people. And me and Ant been doing a lot of work recently with videos and content, and we ended up running into this issue with YouTube, and it kind of just, we've been going live every single day, so it was just so much. But we've been obviously talking about boxing, but obviously the high profile fights, so I really just wasn't able to watch it live, and I didn't even get a chance to, you know, put it up on the screen to watch it, because every moment of my day has been literally accounted for. Like today, I'm going to be out until like almost 11 o'clock. It's crazy. But you know, you got to do what you got to do. And but we will be watching the fights this weekend, including the fight that's coming this Thursday. So there's no need to worry, Joe. We're gonna have a lot of content for the following week. Trust me.
Okay, there we go. There's a promise that you got to keep. Now, just briefly before we end this part, by the way, I just wanted to say that everyone's raving about Andre Ward's new book. He's brought out this new book. It's called Killing the Image. And, you know, the cool thing is that not only can you buy the actual book, but he's done an audiobook for it, and he's actually narrated the whole thing. So it's cool to kind of get him reading you the story. So anyway, yesterday I tweeted that I'm thinking about buying an audiobook for the first time in my entire life, and it's this one by Andre Ward. I tagged him and I said, I'm thinking about buying it, and he said, buy it, or he said, like, do it. So I thought, all right, the champ's telling me to do it, let's go and do it. And I bought this audiobook, and I listened to 4 and a bit hours straight when I was in bed last night. I got more than halfway through the entire thing in one sitting, and I cannot recommend it any higher. I don't know if you're... I haven't yet heard a mention of you in there, Eddie, but I know that that Andre liked your style.
Yeah, he did say that. So, I mean, I don't... He said, you know, he never seen, you know, not never seen, but he said he's so relaxed, and I really, really am a fan of, you know, the way I fought, and I was... like, damn, it's an Andre Ward, motherfucking SOG. You know what I mean? Well, you know, he's a, you know, big time, you know, guy. Even though at the time I was, you know, still at the top, you know, moving up to the top. And actually, I don't think I fought for the title yet, because we were under the same umbrella, you know, as far as promotion. And he was really complimentary. So I'm like, damn, this is really a cool thing to be a part, you know, to have him say something like that, you know, us being a part of the same team. He is always real good dude. And I always respected him a lot, regardless of what. There's a lot of stuff out there about him, and you know, a lot of people didn't like your style and the way you fought. But hey, to be able to retire undefeated and actually stay freaking retired is an accomplishment. And you know, he got what he wanted out of his sport.
Absolutely, he did. And also, so much of the book is not just about boxing. That's why I feel like anyone can pick this book up, or I should say press play on an audiobook, and relate to the things he's saying. Like, I've spent all day long telling my missus, telling my partner, you've got to listen to this, and telling my mum and dad, you've got to listen to this as well. Like, I've just not shut up talking about it all day, and I cannot recommend it any higher. But anyway, that brings part one to a close. It's now time for me to welcome this week's special guest. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome the undefeated super featherweight contender. It is, of course, Mr. Albert Bell. Albert, welcome back on the show, my man.
Thanks for having me. Glad to be back.
Hey, glad to have you back, my friend. So, Albert, we last spoke back in March. At that time, you were getting ready to fight William Encarnacion. You went on to completely dominate him over 10 rounds. Since then, though, 2 back-to-back stoppages. A lot of people felt that Albert Bell wasn't a puncher, but you'd beg to differ. The first stoppage against Presco Carcosia, he'd never been stopped before, but he wasn't a very well-known name. Jason Velez, however, now that's a name we all know too well. You become the quickest man to stop him on the weekend. Talk me through those 2 rounds, my man.
First off, the Carcion fight, he was a tough guy. You know what I mean? But I did went there and did my thing. I would have stopped him, too. I put him down in the second round. And after that, he just went to survival mode and started doing a lot of dirty tactics. So he just did whatever he could do to survive. But I would have got him out of there, too. I wanted to go 3-for-3 this year with 3 stoppages. But the next guy, Carcosia, yeah. Just seen some film on him. I just knew he wasn't on my level once they said that's who I was fighting. It was just time to stay busy. But I just knew he wasn't on my level, so I just wanted to go in there and prove it and get him out of there. I seen him when I would faint throw my jab. He would, like, duck down. So I fainted like I was about to jab, and he ducked right down. I hit him with left uppercut, and that dropped him. And then I just – after that, he was pretty hurt. So after that, I just – poured it on him, and then his corner stepped in. And this weekend, Velez, man, I'm just trying to put stamps, you know what I mean, trying to just show what I am, the best 130 pounder in the world. I deserve my title shot. So whoever they put in front of me, I'm just going to dominate them until they give me what's mine. So Velez, I know he's a tough guy. He's a veteran. I actually thought it was going to be a little more difficult than that, but I just caught him in the first. I caught him good in the second round. And he got up, poured it on him some more, and then hit him with a big left hook, and that was it.
Yeah, that was it. And you said there you expected it to be a little tougher. I expected it to be a lot tougher. I thought it could potentially go to the decision. Yeah, Velez, you know, may not be in the best form right now, but he's still a really tough mm-hmm. guy. Some people on Twitter were heavily betting on you to win by stoppage. They were really confident. How confident were you that you'd get the stoppage within the 10 rounds?
I was pretty confident. I thought I'd get him around 6 or something like that. Like, my hands are really healthy right now. And that was the only thing that was setting me back. I always could punch, always could hit. I either drop or hurt everybody I fight. Like, I'm going to drop you or I'm going to hurt you. It's just, can I finish? Is my hands holding up to finish? But now, ever since I seen the hand doctor last year, my hands aren't good. So, everything's clicking where it's right supposed to, where I can start getting these guys out of here. And I always going to be a fighter that was going to start stopping guys the more the rounds went, the 12-round fights and the better competition. Because that's the type of fighter I'm prepared for more than the guys that's as soon as they get frustrated, they just go into survival mode. You know, I'm gonna get the stoppage of guys that's actually coming to compete and try to win, because that's when my traps and opening and counter shots and stuff is gonna really, you know what I mean, be on full display. So yeah, I was confident I was gonna stop for this.
And yeah, like we say, 2 stoppages in a row now. You wanted 3 for 3. You had actually put together 2 stoppages in a row back in 2018. I was going to ask, maybe is the power just starting to come through a bit more now? But it sounds like what you pretty much just said there. If your hands are 100% and you've got enough time in terms of rounds, then we're going to see stoppages from you.
For sure. You know what I mean? I'm grown, man. I'm a full grown man now, you know, so... everything's just coming in at the right time for me, I believe. It's, you know what I mean? It's all God's plan. That's how he wanted it. That's how he mapped it out. So it's all just coming full tuition for me.
Excellent, man. And it's a really big 7 days for you, because you just fought on the weekend. Now in just a matter of hours, we're going to see the WBO super featherweight title contested for between Emmanuel Navarrete and Robson Conceição. You're ranked number 1. You should get a shot at the winner, or maybe a vacant shot if one of them decides to vacate and move up. How do you see their fight going? And I'm sure you're going to be tuned in.
Yeah, I'm definitely tuned in. I just finished watching the weigh-ins, actually, right before I got on the phone with you. I was watching the weigh-ins. I see it, you know, Conceição, I can see he fights the same way, pretty much. You know, he comes out just so hard, like, not, I wouldn't say wild punches, but they're kind of like looping, like, shots. But he always so hard, and so, like, he try to move and box a little, kind of. And, you know, Navarrete is coming with his unpredictable style, so... Navarrete could get caught with a big shot or something like that, but that's the only really chance I give Conceição in his fight for real. Is like a puncher's chance, but I think Navarrete goes there and he should have a successful defense.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's going to be a good one, though. It always is with Navarrete. If Navarrete were to win like we both expect him to, are you expecting him to vacate?
Yeah, I'm expecting the vacate. I think he's going to go up. I think he's going to try to fight Shakur Stevenson if he wins. So I think that's – I kind of think he'll go up.
And then, yeah, you would get the shot at the vacant title. And am I right in saying – and this is – it seems like a bit of a mess. Obviously, Archie Sharp's a good friend of mine. He's gone down to 3rd now. Liam Wilson, I think, is number 2. So I'm mm-hmm. right in saying it would probably be you and Liam Wilson for the vacant title.
I really don't know. I think it might be me and Archie Sharp, though. I don't know. I know we got it. I know we had agreed to it. We had a network in place that was going to put it on and all that, because we was going to do it for the intern. But they just told us to hang on because Navarrete was about to fight and he might be going up. So they just said, hang on for a second to see, and then come back to the drawing table. And then if he goes vacant, then we'll figure out who I'm fighting. If it's, whether it's Leo Moussin or Archie Sharp or whoever, one of these guys in the top five. I'm not 100% sure how it's going to work. But that's why I want to tell Archie Sharp that to stay active. So I was going to message him, you know, just some advice to, you know, stay active and take a fight or something, you know what I mean, to improve your ranking or try to, so you can stay in the tops, because it's like, it is like a mess. So that's what I'm doing, you know what I mean? I'm staying, I'm not letting nobody jump me in the rankings. I'm not sitting around getting active so one of these guys could have a fight or a big fight and then they jump me in the rankings. So that's why I would tell him to do the same advice. Just stay active as much as you can, because Liam Wilson haven't fought since Navarrete. That'd be, in 2 months, that'd be a year, you know what I mean, since they fought. So he definitely, if he gets another win or something, he could get back up in that number two spot or whatever the case may be. So that would be my advice to him until everything gets sorted out so he could be in that position.
Yeah,
because we both agreed that we would fight each other. You know, I don't think it's no fear, and neither one of us, we've been respectful and actually having conversations about it. So that's what I would tell him. Just try to get back up in that number two spot real quick so it won't be no curveball thrown, and we could go ahead and number one, number two fight and make it happen.
Yeah, wise words. I'm sure he'll hear this. The other champions in the division also fought very recently. I wanted to ask if you saw Foster Hernandez, which was a good fight, or maybe Cordina Vasquez, or maybe both.
Yeah, I watched both.
What did you think?
I watched both. I wasn't really impressed with neither one of their performances. I was impressed by Oshaki Foster's knockout, though. He dug deep, and that's how he closed the show like a champ. But as far as the overall performance, I wasn't impressed by him or Cordina's performances. They both was in there with tough guys, though, so I give them that. But I don't know. I expected a little more dominance by both of the champions. But, you know, it's the fight game, you know. Some guys, you know, they fight for the world title, so they're going to come in with their A game and put their best on display to try to dethrone the champions. But, I just expected a little more than them, or a little cleaner wins by both.
Yeah, I can understand that, man. Makes a lot of sense. I've asked you about the other three champions. It's only right I ask your thoughts on the other champion. Hector Luis Garcia boxes next weekend against Lamont Roach. I'm sure you've probably sparred at least one of them, because you've sparred everyone. How do you see it going?
Yeah, I sparred Roach before. We grew up in the amateurs and stuff together. We sparred when we first was early in our professional careers. But I'm rooting for Roach. He's another guy that we always said that whoever gets the title first, we'll give each other a shot. So, you know what I mean? So hopefully he go ahead and get the title. I get this title. We can try to unify or something, you know, and try to somebody get close to being the first undisputed 130-pound champion or something like that. That's a good goal that I want for myself. So I want Roach to win. I think it's going to be a good fight. I've never really been too impressed with Hector Garcia. You know, he caught, I would say, the weakest link of the champions at the time. Who was it? Roger Gutierrez, that he beat for the title, I believe. And then I just seen him sparring a lot of times in Vegas. I just never seen too much in him. And I know he got quit in him from when he fought Tank. He was doing good in the fight and got caught a shot and basically just quit. So I hope Roach go in there and do his thing, man, and become a champion. That's why I'm rooting for. That's my guy.
Okay, man. We're both rooting for Roach then. And I wanted to get your thoughts as well on this card that they've just announced for December the 23rd in Saudi. It's got to be card of the year. It's just insane, the names on there, man.
Yeah, I literally was just watching... I literally was just watching that too on Twitter with Jared Miller arguing with Anthony Joshua and Deontay Wilder. And I was just cracking up laughing at that. But yeah, that's gonna be a heck of a car. That's like a super car. So that's crazy. That car is fire.
For sure. And just before we wrap it up, Albert, I just want to come to you if you've got any closing words, if you want to sign out with a message before we let you go. The floor is yours, my man. Say whatever you like.
Keep following, support me. Instagram, Albert Prince Bill. Twitter, Albert Bill 419. Facebook, Albert Prince Bill. Stay tuned. Keep trying to bring these great performances and big fights and world championships in 2024. Stay tuned.
Stay tuned. There we go. Listen, Albert, it's always a pleasure, my friend. Thank you for your time. Congrats again on that win, and we'll speak again soon, no doubt.
Thank you, man. Definitely appreciate it.
Okay, now it's time for part two on this week's show. This part, of course, the news part of the show. We're going to start here with this one. Natasha Jonas, friend of the show, she defends her IBF welterweight world title against Michaela Mayer. That one to go down on January the 20th at the M&S Bank Arena in Liverpool, live on Sky Sports. Good fight, that, by the way. Just one fight been announced for the undercard so far. We're going to see Jack Cullen getting there with Zach Chelly. Should be a good one there. What else do we have? Josh Buatsi, Daniel Aziz. That's been rescheduled for February the 3rd. That's going to be going down, at the... Where is it? At the... Yeah, the OVO Arena, Wembley. Interesting. What else do we have? What else do we have? We're recording this before the... Before the Fury Usyk press conference, which would have, now if you're listening to the podcast now, that press conference would have already took place a few hours ago. The rumored date for Fury Usyk is going to be, I think it is February 17th, if I'm not mistaken. So, I think that would have already took place, but we're recording it before that is officially announced, so I'll probably edit this part out of the podcast if I've got the date wrong. What else do we have? Osha Keith Foster has signed a promotional contract with Top Rank. He'll be fighting again in early 2024. And yeah, this absolute, you know, blockbuster of a card that's been announced for December the 23rd. It's going to be a real Christmas cracker, of course, and I just can't believe some of the names on it. I mean, let's just tackle this, Eddie, very quickly, because we've got quite a few bits to go over, obviously, with the preview part. But let's look again at that card. I just want to get a whole list of the fights here. There's eight fights to mention. You can take your pick at these. We're going to see Frank Sanchez getting there with Junior Farr. We're going to see a demolition job here, I think. Filip Hrgović gets in with Mark Damori. We're going to see Arslan Bekmambetov step in the ring with Ajit Kabayel. We're going to see Jai Oppertai get in there with the UK's Ellis Zorro. We're going to see Dimitri Bivol get in there with the UK's Lyndon Arthur. We're going to see, obviously, Anthony Joshua against Otto Wallin. Deontay Wilder getting in with last week's guest, former WBO world champion Joseph Parker. And then last but not least, Daniel Dubois against Jarrell Big Baby Miller. Wow, Eddie. Again, don't go too deep on these just yet, but what do you like on that card? Be as quick as you can.
Man, there's so much to cover there. There's a couple of fights that, you know, are, I think the one of the guys is going to be a little overmatched, I think. I think it, my man, and I like him, I love him to death, he's a good guy, Mark Damori. I think that's a little rough for him, but hey, you know, it is what it is. You got to take your shot. But I like the big four matchup too, and even the one with Big Baby and Daniel Dubois. That's actually pretty appetizing to see what happens there, because Daniel Dubois is such a puncher. To get in there with somebody who he's not going to left to look for is going to be really, really exciting. I'm interested to see just what happens in that fight, whether big, Jarrell Miller will be able to take what he's bringing and be able to overpower him or overwhelm him like he does most of the opponents he faces. Obviously, with Anthony Joshua and Otto Wallin, that is a really interesting fight. I don't know how exciting necessarily, it may be, because I mean, both guys are, I think Otto Wallin more so than Anthony Joshua are more dedicated to, you know, boxing, kind of swimming without getting wet, you know, boxing, to the T, I guess, you know what I mean? Trying to do, you know, do their best work, you know, behind the jab and things like that. And even Anthony Joshua to a degree is as well. And he's a big guy, you know, he's about, you know, he's about six, so he's probably going to be looking to box and keep him at range, you know, as well. So it's going to be really interesting how that fight takes place. I would think in this fight, Anthony Joshua would need to pretty much step to him and kind of let him know right away that he's not going to be able to, you know, peck away at him and make the fight difficult. I would try to step right to him and put a little fear into him and possibly hurt him, you know, early. I wouldn't want the fight to go late with this fight with AJ, because as the makings of one of those upsets, one of those kinds of fights that, you know, make you look bad and you were supposed to look good kind of thing. So, and of course, I just think with Wilder and Joe Parker, Joseph Parker can box. He's a good fighter. You know, he's strong. He's, you know, he's got some good qualities, but it's just Wilder's right hand and his toughness. And he has a decent IQ. It's just, there's a lot of things with Wilder, even though he looks sometimes awful as a fighter. He just has that one thing that you can't teach. You know what I mean? And he has the belief in himself. It's just hard to bet against that dude. You know what I mean? Against anybody but Tyson Fury. So, that's going to be very interesting. I'm pretty sure that Wilder is going to end up getting him out of there. I hate to say it like that because I like Joseph Parker. I think he's a quality guy and a quality fighter, but it's just, that's a tough one, you know?
Yeah, thoroughly looking forward to this event. Usually we have quite a quiet Christmas period when it comes to the podcast and stuff like that. We don't really have too much to talk about, but this is going to be probably the most talked about Christmas show that we've ever done in all the years, because there's going to be a lot to talk about here. Every single fight is pretty much must watch on this card here. A few mismatches, I think, with the likes of, you know, Dimitri Bivol and Lyndon Arthur. I think that's going to end badly for Lyndon. Both guys friends of the show, of course. I remember Dimitri Bivol getting him on a few years ago. He needed a translator, if I remember correctly. And, yeah, that's like the only time ever that I've had someone on with a translator, because I don't think there's much point on a podcast to do an interview with a translator when it's not videoed, because, like, I just don't think there's any point. It's more like I'm interviewing a translator. So I turn a lot of guys down when they want to come on with a translator. It's like, nah, I'm not really into that. But made an exception for Bivol, and he went on to become a very good fighter. Frank Sanchez Jr. Farr, I think that could be interesting. Obviously, you'd have to side with Sanchez, but still, I think that could be interesting. Joshua Wallin, I swear, I am going to be looking at that, you know, for an upset there for Wallin. If the price is right, I wouldn't mind putting something small on that. Hrgović Domori, I think that'll probably go a couple of rounds, even though, yeah, I do really like Mark Domori. Wilder Parker's really interesting. Love to see Parker doing it. Dubois Miller, I think, is probably the most intriguing of the entire well, Joshua Wallin's going to be good, but Dubois Miller is right up there as well. Jayapatai against Ellis Zorro, another kind of mismatch there. And Makhmudov against Khabib. Khabib's undefeated. He's got good feet, and when he wants to, he can box. But yeah, he's getting in with a killer in Makhmudov, who would be a much bigger man, and I'd expect another early finish. But yeah, still cannot wait for that one. But anyway, that's a lot of time that we've spent there talking about the news stuff. Let's move straight on now to the preview part. This one goes down later tonight. It's going to be live on Sky Sports. I think it comes on at 1 a.m. if I'm not mistaken. But it's going to be live on ESPN in the USA. Let's start with the undercard. Few good fights here. We're going to see Emiliano Vargas, one of the many sons of Fernando Vargas. He's 7-0. He gets in with Brandon Mendoza, who's 6-2. That's over six rounds there. We're going to see Abdullah Mason, who is 10-0, getting in with Jose Cardenas, who's 7-1. Not been stopped in that one loss, but they're expecting Mason to stop him, even though it's only a six-rounder. I think I've put a small little bet on Mason to win that in points. But anyway, Troy Isley, friend of the show, 10-0 in an 8-rounder here at middleweight against Vladimir Hernandez, who's 14-5. Caused a few upsets in the past. Vladimir Hernandez coming off a good win against Lorenzo Truck Simpson last time out. Beat Julian J-Rock Williams a couple fights before that. This is a big step up for Isley, and a lot of late money has gone on Vladimir Hernandez to pull off the upset with the bookies there. Also on the card, we should mention this one here. Brian Norman Jr., 24-0, gets in with Quinton Randall, 13-0 with a draw. Somebody's O must go. That's over 10 at welterweight. Floyd Diaz, 9-0, gets in with Max Ornelas, who's 15-1-1. That's over 8 rounds. And yeah, the two main fights on the card. Eddie, let's keep it brief, because again there is a lot to go over. Emmanuel Navarrete, 38-1, defending his WBO world super featherweight title. We just spoke to Albert Bell a few moments ago. He's the number one challenger, you know, the number one ranked guy with a WBO for this title here, and he just said to us that he expects Navarrete to vacate if he beats Conceição, and he'll probably fight for the vacant belt. So he'll be, as he said, tuned into this fight here against Robson Conceição, who we've seen enough times to kind of know what he brings to the table. A good fighter, very unlucky against Oscar Valdez, controversial loss, but got completely dominated by Shakur Stevenson. And yeah, hasn't done anything since. Had one fight that ended in a no contest after two rounds. I can't remember what happened there. That was back in June. And here he goes, straight in with Navarrete, who gave us one of the fights of the year back in August. Not too long ago. It was a real war against Oscar Valdez. But yeah, one that Navarrete came through again. And he's still on that mental streak. I can't remember how many wins he's put together now. Yeah, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. He lost in his sixth pro fight. Since then, he's put together 33 wins, if I'm not mistaken. So he's on a heck of a run. But how do you see that one going, just briefly, Eddie?
I mean, just looking at the recent form, both fighters, you know, I've seen a good bit of Navarrete, and I really respect what he does. His game, he's got a deep game. He's tough. I would favor him in this fight. It's going to be very interesting. He ain't got a dead guy in front of him. He got somebody who's coming to take to come in to win. But it's going to be very, very interesting, in my opinion.
Yeah, should be a good one. Always is when Navarrete is involved. 7 years, Conceição Jr. By the way, that's an interesting one. But yeah, the main event, a lot of people think that Navarrete is going to beat Conceição and move up to face the winner of the main event. Shakur Stevenson, friend of the show, 20-0. It's for the vacant WBC lightweight world title. He gets in with Edwin De Los Santos. It's going to be Shakur's second fight at lightweight. Edwin De Los Santos, I've got to be honest, I haven't seen too much of him, but he's 16-1 with 14 KOs. The one loss was a split decision loss over 8 rounds. Super close against William Foster III, who we saw a couple weeks ago losing to Henry Lebron in a close fight as well. Coming off a win last time out, Edwin De Los Santos over Joseph Adorno. I did watch that fight. He completely dominated a very tough and game Adorno. But yeah, this is a big step up for him. I don't know if you've seen much of Edwin De Los Santos, Eddie, but what are your thoughts on this one?
It's funny. We were actually looking, me and Ann, we're trying to break down De Los Santos' fight with... I think it was Venezuela, I think the kid's name was, if I'm not mistaken. If I'm getting his name right, I'm not sure. And, you know, the kid, he was supposed to be the winning side, you know what I mean? The A side of the bout. And De Los Santos came in and just completely spoiled the show. But that was what we got flagged on YouTube for reposting that and, you know, going over it. But De Los Santos is not a pushover. He's a good puncher. He's got good speed. He understands range. Really sharp. All that being said, Shakur Stevens is one of the best fighters in boxing, in my opinion. One of the most talented guys we got. And I just don't think, even with all De Los Santos has. And I'm not saying he's a pushover. I'm not saying there's not a possibility that he could beat, get in there and find a way to win with Shakur. But I think Shakur just is a special fighter. Special fighter, one that understands defense and the importance of it. Extremely sharp, extremely high IQ and boxing ability and athleticism. He's got it all. He might not be a knockout puncher, but he makes up for it in a lot of other ways. But and then he can get the respect, but not necessarily a knockout puncher. But anyway, he's a really talented guy, and I'm looking to see that. I'm pretty sure that he's going to end up coming out with the victory. I'm not sure by knockout or by decision, but I'm definitely thinking Shakur for that one. But it's going to be a very, very, very good fight.
Yeah, like I said, I'm expecting a lot of pressure from Edwin De Los Santos, and he certainly can punch. Moving to this card, it goes down on Friday at the Humo Arena in Tashkent, Uzbekistan. A couple fights to mention over here. Let's start with this one. Pedro Guevara, he is a former WBC light flyweight champion, I think it was. Anyway, he was champion, I think, back in 2015 or something like that. And he's back here, gets in with Carlos Cuadras. It's for the vacant WBC Interim World Super Flyweight title, over 12 there, obviously. Guevara is the favourite there. I know that Cuadras is kind of, seems like he's on the slide a bit. Lost back-to-back, but to, Estrada and Bam Rodriguez. He's come back with two low-level wins since then. Both took place this year, and he's back here against Pedro Guevara. Like I say, he's a slight underdog, so that could be interesting there. Also on the card, Miriam Nursultanov, 19-0 with 11 KOs. I'm going to be totally honest. I'm not entirely sure who this guy is. He's a Kazakh. I think he might have done something quite impressive maybe in the amateurs. I've heard this guy is a pretty special fighter, but I don't think I've seen him fight. I'm going to be honest, I don't think I've seen him fight. Just quickly looking at that record there. Beat Marcelo Casares over 10. He's boxed Andrei Sorokin. Okay, got a stoppage against him. Yeah, I don't really know this guy. But anyway, gets in with Vincent Feigenbutz, who's 36-3. Usually in fun fights, Only gone the distance four times in 39 contests. So he either bangs you out or gets banged out. I think Nursultanov probably going to have a little bit too much for Feigenbutz, though. Also on this card, we're going to see Ermal Hadribij, who's 16-0 with a draw. It's for the WBC International Super Welterweight title. He boxed a couple of guys. He's another guy, from Albania, based in Miami Beach, super welterweight, southpaw. I don't know if he did big things as an amateur or not. You see a lot of these guys, boxing on these Uzbekistan shows who were just unbelievable amateurs. But anyway, he gets in with friend of the show, former world champion Carlos Molina, 38-13 with two draws. You'd expect this fight to probably go the distance. Hadribij isn't that much of a puncher. Carlos Molina still never been stopped in his 13 losses. I'd love to see him pull it off. Also on the card as well, we're going to see... should we mention that one or not? Nah. Okay, moving to this one then. Bakadir Jalilov, the Olympic gold medalist, 13-0 with 13 KOs. He gets in with Chris Thompson of South Africa, who's 12-5 with a draw, been stopped twice. He's coming off three back-to-back-to-back losses. His most recent loss was to Solomon Dacres. That was on points. He lost to Evgeny Romanov on points. Got banged out by Keaton Gomez. This is a guy who's going to get smashed by Jalilov there in a bit of a homecoming in Uzbekistan. Moving now to the Manchester Arena. This one goes down Saturday, so there's boxing Thursday, Friday and Saturday. This is arguably the most competitive card of the entire year. Frank Warren has put it on. I think pretty much every single fight on the card is going to get a mention from me. But let's start right down the bottom of it. We're going to see Callum Thompson, 7-0, getting in there with Joshua Ocampo, who's 8-19 with 5 draws, only been stopped twice. You'd expect Callum Thompson to win that one on points for sure. He's only got one KO, even though... I thought it was in his last fight, but it wasn't. Forget that. What else do we have? Solomon Dacres, we mentioned him a moment ago. 7-0 for the English heavyweight title over 10 rounds against Michael Webster, 9-0. Solomon Dacres, I've said it many, many times, bores me to death. I hate to say that. I hate to be negative about, you know, a heavyweight, a big English heavyweight who's, you know, technically quite sound, but he's super boring to watch. Only 2 KOs. He gets in with this guy, Michael Webster, 9-0, 6 KOs. I'm hoping that Webster's power can make this a bit more interesting. Hopefully it's a good one, but I don't have much faith. Hannah Rankin on the card as well, 13-6. She gets in with Emma Cosin, who's 23-1 with a draw. Both girls have a few common opponents, but the standout common opponent was Clarissa Shields, who beat both girls 100-90 across all three scorecards. So she completely whitewashed both of these girls. They're fighting here for the vacant WBC World Super Welterweight title over 10 2-minute rounds. All the best to Hannah Rankin. Nathaniel Collins, who's been really impressing lately, 13-0, Scottish fighter, southpaw. Good knockout last time against Raza Hamza. Good knockout the time before that against James Beats Jr. He gets in here with Zach Miller. It's the battle of the 13-0s. It's for the British and Commonwealth featherweight titles. Zach Miller, not a bad fighter, to be honest with you. I can see this going a few rounds, actually. I don't think we're going to see, you know, Nathaniel Collins go in here and bang him out in a round or two. Could be wrong. One thing I have noticed about Zach Miller is that he hasn't beaten anyone with a winning record. That's always a bit of a concern, so it's a big step up for him. But I don't think technically he's that bad. Also on the card, I think this one's going to be a madness, to be honest with you. Denzel Bentley, 18-2 with a draw. So over 12 rounds for his British middleweight title, he gets in with the undefeated Nathan Heaney. Why is this fight happening? I think it's a bit of a mismatch, to be honest with you. I'm expecting Denzel Bentley to go in there and stop Heaney, probably within 6 rounds. I'll be quite surprised if Bentley doesn't knock him out, but certainly Denzel Bentley will win this, and quite comfortably, I think. I think Heaney has done very well to get to 17-0. I think he's got a lot better than he initially was. I think he's improved a lot, but sometimes he used to get a lot of hate that I didn't feel he deserved, and then I think he got a bit better, and then still the hate was a little bit behind him for some reason. I don't know why. I think he's, you know, pretty cool guy, brings a great crowd, you know. He's a showman, and he's a decent fighter, but I just think Denzel Bentley's a few levels above Heaney, to be honest with you. I think we're going to see that quite early on. We're going to see a good fight here between Echo Esserman, 19-0, and Harry Scarfe, 12-2. It's over 12 rounds for the British Commonwealth and IBF European welterweight titles. Harry Scarfe, 12-2, like I say, not a puncher at all, but got a few good wins. I mean, he's lost to Troy Williamson and Anthony Fowler, both on points. He got a good win against Louis Green on points, got a good win against Jordan Dujon on points, and he beat someone else who was pretty good, and I can't remember who it was. Jack Flatley. He beat Jack Flatley as well, took his O. So, yeah, but I mean, again, Echo Esserman, for me, probably a level or two above him. I think it's going to be a good fight. I think it's going to probably be more competitive than some people are expecting it to be, but again, you'd have to side with Echo Esserman, probably on points. Also on the card, friend of the show, Liam Davies. It's for his EBU European Super Bantamweight title. Another 12-rounder. He gets in with the undefeated Italian Vincenzo Lafamina, 13-0. I don't know too much about this guy at all, to be honest with you, but I'm expecting Liam Davies to do the business. He's a guy that I have really high hopes for. I think he could go all the way. I'm just noticing here that there's a lot of, a lot of fights here that are scheduled for a lot of rounds. There's a 6-rounder, 6-rounder, 10-rounder, 10-rounder, 12, 12, 12, 12, and 12. So we could see a few rounds here if we don't get knockouts on this card. Could be a late finish. And the main event, and it's worthy of being the main event as well, Nick Ball 18-0. The Wrecking Ball, 11 KOs, seems unstoppable at the moment, on a heck of a run. What's he got? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 knockouts in a row, most of them coming early. Last opponent that he boxed, he put in, I think it might have been a coma. Yeah, I can't remember. Not that that's something to brag about, but he's a dangerous, dangerous puncher. And he gets in with former WBO super bantamweight world champion, friend of the show, Isaac Dogbay, 24-3. Coming off a loss to Rabisi Ramirez. Obviously, we know about the two back-to-back batterings he took from Emmanuel Navarrete. But in between the Navarrete and the Ramirez fight, put together some good wins. Chris Avalos, Christopher Diaz, Adam Lopez, Joet Gonzalez. I mean, listen, he got the win, but a lot of those fights were very close. One split decision, two majority decisions, and one a stoppage against Chris Avalos. But Nick Ball here, I mean, this is a massive step up for Nick Ball. Absolutely massive step up for Nick Ball. And it has to be noted that Isaac Dogbay is pretty much the smaller man in the ring, 24-7. He's always a smaller guy giving away height. But here, if the stats are correct, he's the larger man, and that will be different for him. Yeah, this will be really interesting. I don't think we're going to see Nick Ball, you know, walk through Dogbay, no way. But I think it could be a war, and I would love to see Dogbay pull it off. He's a friend of the show. He's a very nice guy, so it's going to be a neho from me. Moving now to the York Hall, Bethnal Green over here. Friend of the show, Casey Kadami, 9-1 with two draws. He's back out in a 10-rounder at Super Flyweight against Selemani Bangaiza, who's 19-8. It's for the IBO Intercontinental Super Flyweight title. Moving now to the Civic Hall in Wolverhampton, West Midlands, United Kingdom. Unfortunately, this one clashes with the Frank Warren card, but I don't think we're going to get many viewers, even though it's on Sky. So, you know, I guess we will get a few viewers because it's on Sky, but you know, it's the card doesn't really compete with that Frank Warren card, and it shouldn't do because the fights on that card are so brilliantly well matched. But over here, we've got to mention it. We're going to see Richard Ryakpor, 16-0. It's only an 8-rounder. He gets in with Dylan Breguion, who some people will know him, 13-4 with a draw. Been over here to the UK a few times, boxed Isaac Chamberlain, lost on points, boxed Chris Billum-Smith, lost on points. Only been stopped once, it was to Mikel Sislak, who just knocked out Tommy McCarthy a couple weeks ago. He's a good fighter, but yeah, I'm expecting this one to obviously be quite a straightforward win for Ryakpor. Wouldn't be surprised though to see a few rounds. Also on the card, this one could be interesting. Rhys Edwards, 14-0, gets in there with Brad Foster, who's 15-2 with two draws. At one point, Brad Foster looked brilliant. I remember being there when he beat Lucian Reed. I think I was at that fight at least. They had two fights. Can't remember which one I was at. It was a draw the first time, and he beat him the second time. Whatever happened to Lucian Reed? I haven't seen him. Yeah, he hasn't boxed since that second fight with Brad Foster 3 and a bit years ago. What a shame. But anyways, Brad Foster just kind of went off the boil a little bit, you know. Beat Lucian Reed in that rematch, beat James Beast Jr., took his O, then lost, quite surprisingly in my opinion, to Jason Cunningham, then lost to Iron Up Baluta. Again, I think Baluta's a really good fighter. Come back with a little win, now he's in with Rhys Edwards. I think that's a good fight there, you know, I really do. I mean, Rhys Edwards hasn't really been in with anyone yet. Certainly no one on Foster's level, and he'd probably lose to both the guys that Brad Foster lost to. So might be worth a small punt on Brad Foster there, but it is a little bit of a last chance saloon with him. I don't think he's signed to a big promoter anymore. Also on this card, we're going to see Matteo Signani. He is 32-6 with three draws. It's for the EBU European middleweight title over 12 rounds. He defends his belt against the UK's Tyler Denny, who is 17-2 with three draws. Still hasn't scored a knockout win at all. Signani, though, 44 years of age. Lost back in 2016 to Emanuele Blandamora. I remember Billy Joe Saunders beating him. Bit of a padded record, to be honest. Yes, I'm expecting Tyler Denny to win that one, probably on points, as he likes to do. This guy Signani, even though he's got six losses, only been stopped once. So yeah, should be a points win there for Tyler Denny. And then we're going to see the main event for the EBU European Super Lightweight title, Franck Petitjean. of France. So again, you're getting another accent here for free. 24-6 with 3 draws, 6 KOs, only been stopped the one time. Coming off a good win last time against Samuel Molina of Spain. Lost the fight before that to a guy I haven't heard of. Lost the fight a couple fights before that to Mohamed Mamoun, who's a good fighter. And then quite a good run, really, from sort of 2014 up to 2018. Most of his losses sort of came early on. It seems like he's turned the corner a little bit, but he has lost 2 of his last 4. And he gets in with Adam Azim, who we know is tipped for such special things that Adam Azim should win this relatively easily. Will it be stoppage? Will it be points? That's the one question in my mind, and I'm not too sure. And then coming to the final card to mention, it goes down at the YouTube Theater in Inglewood, California, USA. We're going to see on this one here, we're going to see Mark Castro, who I always like to say has the best teeth in boxing. Like, I would actually cry if I saw him get his tooth knocked out because they're pearly white. And it would be sad because he's got the best teeth, believe me. And hopefully we see him win. Hopefully we see him smile. It's always a pleasure to see my reflection in his pearly whites. But yeah, he gets in with Gonzalo Fuenzalida, who's 12-2, been stopped in both of his 2 losses. Knocked out last time to Claudio Moreiro back in February. That was 5 rounds. Should be a knockout win, this, really, for Mark Castro. Also on the card, former world champion, friend of the show, Cal Yafai, 27-1. Gets in with Jonathan Rodriguez, 16-1 with a draw. It's for the vacant WBA Intercontinental Bantamweight world title. Not world title, I'm getting really mixed up here. WBA Intercontinental Bantamweight title. Cal Yafai hasn't boxed since last November, so pretty much a year almost to the day out of the ring. That was the fight that he just scraped, actually. He was down in the first round, Cal Yafai, and he scraped a win there in Abu Dhabi. That was on the Chantel Cameron and Jessica McCaskill card. That's right, Dimitri Bivol and Gilberto Ramirez as well. So he was very lucky there, and he gets in with this guy Jonathan Rodriguez, 16-1 with a draw. Got banged out in his one loss, but that was back in 2020. Since then, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 fights since 2020. He's been quite busy. 8 wins and a draw. I've heard that this guy is not that good, but again, it's another guy that has been kept away from the kind of big cards, so I haven't seen him. But he's with Marshall Kaufman, so I'm giving him a slight chance here. It would be interesting to see those odds. Cal Yafai, I think, is very much on the slide, even though I like the guy. Also on the card as well, we're going to see Mayalin Rivas, who's 17-4 with 3 draws. It's for the WBA World Super Bantamweight title. She gets in with Erica Cruz, who these days is 16-2. Again, could be quite interesting. I remember watching Erica Cruz against Amanda Serrano a couple fights ago earlier this year, and it was just a bloodbath. It was a really, really, really entertaining fight. But it wasn't that competitive. A lot of people expected more from her. Since then, she's had one fight. She beat Melissa Odessa Parker, and she really dominated her. And I think for me, that kind of told me, okay, she does still have, you know, perhaps quite a lot left. So yeah, she gets in with Mayalin Rivas, and she's the favourite. Rivas, I think, slightly older. Coming off a draw last time, out a technical draw, so she held on to her title there. It was a clash of heads that caused a cut, and yeah, that was back in June. Hopefully she's all healed up. It was the other lady that got cut, actually, so it's not her, so she'll be fine. And then yeah, the main event, let's just get to it. Here we go, let's sign out with this one. Diego Pacheco, 19-0, in search of win number 20. It's over 10 rounds at super middleweight. It's for the WBC USA and WBO International super middleweight titles. And he gets in with Marcelo Coseras, who's 32-5 with a draw. I think we've already mentioned him on this week's show. He's more so known for his losses, but his losses have been very, he's always tested the guy that's beaten him. Got in there with Billy Joe Saunders, was winning, I think, that fight on 1 or 2 scorecards until he got stopped in the 11th round. Lost a split decision to a guy he'd previously beaten, which was a bit weird. Got in there with Edgar Belanga and put Belanga down. And of course, you know, he didn't get knocked out. That was another time where Belanga couldn't get the knockout, and he actually put Belanga down. The fight after that, lost quite wide to Eric Bazinyan in Canada, even though it's hard to win rounds over there with their judging when it comes to Eric Bazinyan. And then we mentioned him a little bit earlier, Merim Nursultanov, who's going to be fighting in Uzbekistan against Vincent Feigenbutz. He lost to him a couple fights ago, but that one was on point. So he's a very, very tough guy. Diego Pacheco, this is a real test, actually. It's kind of gone under the radar a little bit. I mean, it's on DAZN, so a lot of people are going to know about it, but it's not being spoke about with some of the bigger fights. But I think it could potentially be just as competitive as some of the fights that we've mentioned earlier on. It will be a test. And Pacheco, you know, he's so used to getting the knockouts. I don't know if he's going to be able to get it against Caceres. Obviously, Pacheco's so big as well for the weight. Might be able to get to him. But it's going to be interesting while it lasts. And he won't have it easy. I don't think he's going to just go in there and walk through him. I think Caceres is going to hang in there and, you know, ask a few questions of Pacheco. It's a fantastic fight for a guy that's learning on the job, and that's what I think they're doing with Pacheco. Could be his 20th win here. So yeah, I'm going to be definitely staying up for that one to watch it live. And that brings the preview part to a close. Don't know if you wanted to add anything, Eddie. I know you spoke about the news part mainly, but and obviously the Shakur Stevenson card. Anything else to add before we wrap it up, my man?
Nah, man. I think we just about covered everything. Yeah, we covered everything. I think you did a good job with it today, Joe. There's a lot to go over, and we got it done.
There we go. We got it done. Well, there we go. That brings the preview part to a close. It's now time for me to come in with the outro, which I'll do in just a few seconds. Okay, and this wraps up episode 422 of the Box Hard Podcast. I've been your host, Joey Coastman. Eddie Chambers has been with me for the duration of the show. A huge shout out to this week's special guest, the undefeated top super featherweight contender, Mr. Albert Bell. Good to have him on once again. The biggest thanks of all, though, goes out to you, the listeners. Thanks once again for tuning in. As I said earlier on in the show, February the 17th, that date is right for Fury Usyk, so didn't have to go back and change that, thankfully. That's about everything, though, from myself. Enjoy your weekends, people. Stay safe, and we shall see you all again next week.